Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls Media Roundtable. Later in the show, we'll find out why Appalachian coal miners are facing the highest levels of black lung disease in 50 years. We begin today's show by talking about Gaza and the ongoing U.S.-backed Israeli assault, which has killed more than 73,000 Palestinians and resulted and the largest number of child amputees in modern history. Civilians are still being killed by Israeli airstrikes 9 months into the so-called ceasefire. Nearly all of Gaza's 2 million people now live on a tiny strip of land along the coast, mainly in makeshift tents or damaged buildings where they face dire humanitarian conditions. Israel now controls nearly 70% of the enclave. Despite all of this, the U.S.-Iran war and the broader crisis in the Middle East have shifted global attention away from Gaza. Palestinian journalists are still doing whatever they can to get news out, but it's becoming increasingly difficult. According to the Palestinian Journalist Syndicate, the Israeli assault has killed at least 270 Palestinian media workers in Gaza, and the Israeli government still refuses to allow outside journalists into Gaza. Joining us to talk about media coverage of Gaza and the loss of so many Palestinian journalists is Sharif Abdul Quddus, an award-winning journalist and editor for the Middle East and North Africa at Dropsite, an independent investigative news organization dedicated to exposing the crimes of the powerful, particularly in overt and secret conflicts where the U.S. government is playing a key role. Sharif Abdul Quddus's work has appeared in many publications, including Al Jazeera and The Nation. Hi, Sharif. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you for having me.
Well, as I said in the intro, the U.S. war on Iran and everything that's happening in the Middle East has just really taken attention away from Gaza. I'm even noticing that when Gaza is mentioned in major media outlets, the number of people who have been killed is not mentioned. We hardly talk about the fact that Gaza is now home to the largest number of child amputees in modern history. What is your overall take on how major media outlets are covering Gaza?
Well, there certainly has been a dip in coverage for a number of reasons. One is that the U.S.-Israeli war in Iran that began in February really shifted a lot of the attention away from Gaza. But also there has been another reason, which is a narrative that's pushed by the United States and Israel very heavily, that the so-called ceasefire agreement that was signed in October was in fact a ceasefire, and that right now we're in a stage where Hamas and Israel are just kind of quibbling over the details. But this was really a ceasefire in name only. Israel has violated the ceasefire on a regular basis, every single day, in fact. It has not allowed in the agreed upon levels of aid and life essentials and reconstruction equipment. But more importantly, it's also continued attacks nearly every single day. Something like over 1,200 Palestinians have been killed, including over 300 children, during what's supposed to be a ceasefire. They just killed a Palestinian child on Wednesday, a 10-year-old, in a strike. They also did a targeted strike on the police chief of Gaza. And under international law, police are considered civilians, and the UN has spoken out about this. So, you know, these are a couple of reasons why the coverage has gone down. But also, as you mentioned, Israel has killed an unprecedented number of journalists in Gaza, over 270. According to the Palestinian Journalist Syndicate, that's about a fifth of the press corps in Gaza. And at the same time, Israel does not allow in international journalists. And so the remaining journalists in Gaza are left to shoulder the responsibility of covering this war completely alone. And they're coming under an unprecedented assault. And just finally, we just passed the one-year anniversary of the assassination of perhaps at the time the most prominent journalist in Gaza, Enes El-Sharif. He was a correspondent for Al Jazeera, and he was killed in an airstrike on a media tent outside of Shifa Hospital in Gaza City on August 10th of last year, in a strike that the Israeli military proudly admitted to and bragged about, and in a strike that killed five other journalists, including four from Al Jazeera, and another one from Sahet. And Israel is able to do this because it enjoys complete impunity. It pays no consequences for the killing of civilians or the killing of journalists, either by its U.S. backers in successive administrations, by the Biden administration, the Trump administration, or its European backers. But also, I would argue, the coverage of legacy media outlets in the United States and Europe, what's called mainstream media outlets, has also enabled this killing to continue. You know, Enes Shirif was part of a Pulitzer Prize winning team for Reuters. Reuters was awarded a Pulitzer Prize in photography last year. And one of the photo submissions was a photo by Enes Shirif of Jabalia, of a 2,000-pound bomb that had hit Jabalia, where he's from. Reuters' coverage, the day he was assassinated last year, they put in the headline Israel's claims that he was a member of Hamas's armed wing. And in their lead, they also put these false claims that Enes Shirif was a member of Hamas. They did put a denial, but they said the denial was by Al Jazeera, his employer, which they stressed was funded by the Qatari government. And it's this kind of coverage, you know, this is coverage of a reporter who helped them win the Pulitzer Prize. Mm. And they are, you know, kind of parroting Israeli claims which have found to be unsubstantiated by the UN, by the world's leading press watchdog groups. And so that's why this kind of killing can continue.
We're going to talk more about Enes al-Shirif and the interview that you did with his colleague, Palestinian journalist Abu Bakr Abed. Before we do that, Shirif, can you remind us about the incredible work that Palestinian journalists have done over the past couple of years? I mean, the only reason why we know what has happened and is happening in Gaza is because of the Palestinian journalists, so many of them so young. Israel is still not allowing outside journalists to enter Gaza independently. And a lot of the reason why so many people are so angry about what has happened in Gaza is because of what these Palestinian journalists filmed, in many cases, on their phones. Can you just remind us of the role that they have played in that critical coverage?
Palestinian journalists in Gaza have performed the most heroic act of journalism in our lifetimes, and I would argue in modern history. They have endured the unimaginable and have continued to report on what the United Nations Commission of Inquiry, what the world's leading human rights groups have all concluded, and leading genocide scholars, is a genocide. And they have had to shoulder this labor completely by themselves because no international journalists are allowed in. And they have been subjected to everything that they are covering. Their family members have been killed. Their colleagues have been killed. They've been displaced multiple times. They've been hungry and starving. And we're not even talking about all the journalists who have been wounded, who no longer are able to cover, and the journalists who have had to make the impossible decision to leave Gaza, either because they were suffering from malnutrition, or they want to protect their families, or they just needed to get out. And so I think the world owes a great debt to these journalists. I mean, this war has also been covered by Palestinians, regular Palestinians in Gaza. You know, it's a lot of why we hear this is the first live-streamed genocide, is because regular people have been filming and posting what's happening. But journalists occupy a special space because they are trained storytellers and they are trained investigators, and they are the eyes and ears for us to understand really what's happening. And there's a reason that Israel conducted, for example, this strike on Enes Shirif and on this media tent when it did last year on August 10th, 2025. This came right as the Israeli cabinet had approved a full-scale invasion of Gaza City, and it was about to attack the largest urban space in Gaza and take it over, as it had decimated Rafah and Beit Lahia and Beit Hanun and other areas. And they murdered basically the entire Al Jazeera team in Gaza City on the brink of this invasion. And so they want to operate in the darkness. And finally, I will say there has been a increasing level of brazenness in the way Israel has targeted and killed journalists. If you look at the beginning, when journalists were killed, and in the first 10 weeks of this war, more journalists had been killed in Gaza than the Committee to Protect Journalists had documented of any full year since it began keeping records. So this began very early on. But in the beginning, they would say, they would either just not say anything about a journalist being killed, or they would say it was a mistake and use the term collateral damage. Then we slowly started to see that they would claim that the journalist was a militant after they killed them. We saw this with Hamza Dahdouh in January of 2024. We saw it with Ismail Al-Ghul, both Al Jazeera journalists, in the summer of 2024. Then they went a step further and they put six Al Jazeera journalists, including Anas Al-Sharif and our colleague Hossam Shabat, who contributed to DropSite. They put them on a what was essentially a hit list in October of 2024, announcing that these six journalists, all working with Al Jazeera, all operating in North Gaza, were terrorists and that they were going to kill them. And that the Israeli military spokesperson in Arabic was repeatedly taunting them, threatening them, and they have so far killed two of them. So this is preemptively announcing that they're going to assassinate journalists, and they do assassinate them, and yet they pay no price for it. And so that's, they know that they can operate with impunity, and so they keep pushing these lines, these red lines, further and further.
Sharif, you are in very close contact with journalists in Gaza. You often interview them. Is there any way of knowing how many Palestinian reporters are still working in Gaza?
I don't know the number. The Palestinian Journalist Syndicate earlier this summer said that about a fifth of the working journalists before the war that they had on record had been killed. And again, that's not counting the number of journalists who have stopped working because they were wounded, because they pose a risk to themselves too much, or that have left Gaza if they were able to. So it's hard to know. But what we do know is that, you know, I've spoken to journalists who told me that when they are, for example, are displaced and they have to move into another tent or move into, you know, some other damaged building, their neighbors tell them to leave because they're afraid that they will be bombed because they're journalists. So, the press vest has been turned from a shield into a bullseye. That's how targeted these people are. And it's really it's a mark of shame on all of us that this has been allowed to continue.
And there's an incredible new project, Sharif, The Living Record. Gaza's journalists remember their martyred colleagues. They write, more than 260 journalists have been killed in Israel's genocidal war on Gaza, more than in any war in history. To be witnesses for their people, they sacrificed everything. Here, their own stories are told. Listen and heed the voices of Gaza. And there's so many names here: Mohammed Nufal, Hamza Al-Dadu, Moama Aliwa, Ismail Al-Ghul, Bilal Jalada, so many. And if you click on it, there's a photo of the journalist who's been killed with a short bio, and then they're remembered by their friends. And there's audio, and then there's also the English translation. Are you familiar with this organization, the New York War Crimes?
Yes, absolutely. This is a publication that is put together by WAWOG, which is Writers Against the War on Gaza. It's a really great publication. I encourage everyone to check it out. They do original reporting. They publish poetry. But they are the ones who took on this project for the past several months to basically create an archive and a tribute to the Palestinian journalist martyrs, as they call them, with their friends, their mentors, their loved ones, describing them and talking about them and talking about their importance and remembering them. It's really an incredible website, and I encourage everyone to go look at it. It's also constantly being updated. And I did donate to this effort because I did an interview through another reporter in September of 2024 with Anas Al-Sharif. He was then the most recognizable and prominent Palestinian journalist operating in Gaza and covering the genocide. And I just wanted to kind of get his thoughts on what it was like to continue coverage during this very, very difficult time. And he sent back a 10-minute-and-a-half voice note describing why he continued to do this coverage and how, and all the trials and tribulations that he had to go through and the colleagues that he had to bury. And I donated that audio to be a part of this archive as well.
Hmm. You know, we're going to do an entire show about this because these journalists really need to be remembered. I just want to read from a few of the bios. Bilal Hassan Salem Jadala was born May 1st, 1978 in Gaza City and had a degree in English literature. Jadala, who was known as the godfather of Palestinian journalism, founded Press House Palestine, a nonprofit that supports the development of independent Palestinian media. He helped many journalists in Gaza establish their careers. He was killed
I'm sorry to interrupt, but yeah. Bilal Jadala was a very important figure, as mentioned, the godfather of journalists in Gaza. When I went to Gaza to cover the 2014 war, when you enter Gaza, after you cross through the Israeli checkpoint, you enter Gaza, there's a Palestinian checkpoint, and you need someone to be your representative and to sign you in. And Bilal Jadala was my representative, and he took me in. He took me to Press House. He assigned me a journalist to work with. You know, most people call them fixers, although I don't really like that term. And he was basically helping all of these young Palestinian journalists to work with the international journalists coming in. He was holding forth on analysis as well and giving very insightful comments on the military campaign that was happening. And, he was hit in what looks like a deliberate targeted strike in November of 2023, right at the beginning of the war, and killed. There's so many incredible journalists, both young and old, who have been snuffed out, either deliberately assassinated or wantonly killed by Israel.
It's devastating. He was killed as he drove south in his car from Gaza City. He was only 45. And his brother-in-law, pharmacist Abdel Karim Mohammed Abed, was also killed. Just a couple other stories. Ibrahim Zahir was born in the Jabalia refugee camp in the year 2000. He worked for Al Jazeera as a camera operator for nearly 2 years. Every moment in his life was dedicated to the people of Gaza. Even after his shifts as a journalist, he volunteered as a paramedic. He was killed in a targeted airstrike on the journalist's tent at Al-Shifa Hospital alongside five of his colleagues on August 10th, 2025. That's what we're talking about, the year-long anniversary, along with Anas al-Sharif, born in a Jabalia refugee camp on December 3rd, 1996, to a family from Al-Majal. After graduating from Al-Aqsa University in 2018, he began work as a volunteer for the Al-Shamal Media Network. He prepared reports on conditions in the Gaza Strip for a number of outlets, including he also covered the 2018 demonstration during the Great March of Return. Sharif, you spoke, and I want to play a clip here. You spoke with Palestinian journalist Abu Bakr Abed, a frequent drop site contributor who covered Gaza from the ground before making the very difficult decision to leave last year.
Honestly, because I left Gaza a year ago, I think it has become even harder for journalists to work or report freely and independently and to go to the bombed out scenes because the double tap strikes or techniques have been used repeatedly by Israel during these times. I think what I'm saddened most about regarding Anas Sharif is that he repeatedly called on international committees to protect journalists and international media organizations to protect him. He flagged up all these threats directed at him by Israeli military officers and by pro-Israel media personalities. But there was no response. And I believe that the world failed him. We haven't seen any response. The killing of journalists continued unabated since his killing. And when we are talking about Anas Sharif, he was truly the eyes of Gaza, the most popular Arabic-speaking journalist in Gaza, the one who covered northern Gaza. I think without him, we didn't have known anything about what happened in northern Gaza. The catastrophic famine levels in parts of northern Gaza, the destruction, the obliteration operations that have been carried out by the Israeli military in vast parts of Jabalia and Beit Lahia. Wouldn't have known anything about that, weren't it for the likes of Anas Sharif. And I think since his killing, we haven't seen as much coverage as when he was alive. So this loss is not just one that concerns Al Jazeera, it concerns the entire media or journalist community in Gaza and around the globe. But I don't believe that Western mainstream media and most of the Western media outlets, including the Arab media outlets, care much about it, because they have been regurgitating all this propaganda, believing Israel's talking points as if he was a literal Hamas or whatever operative, which wasn't proved at all. It was a baseless allegation that other media outlets took as fact. So we're talking about a massive loss.
That was Palestinian journalist Abu Bakr Abed, a frequent drop site contributor who covered Gaza from the ground before making the difficult decision to leave last year. He was speaking with today's guest, Sharif Abdul Quddus, an award-winning journalist and editor for the Middle East and North Africa for Drop Site, an independent investigative news organization dedicated to exposing the crimes of the powerful. Sharif, we've noticed over the past couple of years that Palestinian journalists, I mean, they're so active on social media, and they make it very easy to find them. They offer their email and in some cases their phone number. So it's not hard to find a Palestinian journalist to interview, and yet we rarely hear from them in the mainstream media.
Yeah, I think, first of all, this betrays a deep bias and one could even say a racist worldview that says that Palestinian journalists in Gaza somehow cannot cover the war against their own people for some reason. They would be skewed in some way. A viewpoint that is never applied to Western journalists. You would never say to an American journalist that they can't cover Washington, D.C. If they live in Washington, because they would be biased. But yes, these journalists are there. They want to work. They need to work, actually. They need to get paid. And they are the best journalists on the ground that can cover what's happening. And so what we try and do at Drop Site is we have the honor of working with people like Abu Bakr Abed, with people like the late Hossein Shabet and others to provide this coverage. So yes, they're there and they're ready to work. And as you heard, Abu Bakr Abed, he was talking about the threats that Anas Sharif was receiving. You know, he would receive calls on his phone from the Israeli military, from officers, ordering him to cease coverage, ordering him to leave northern Gaza. They would send him pin locations of his current location to let them know that they knew exactly where he was. They bombed his home and killed his 90-year-old father. Then just a little over 2 weeks before he was assassinated, the Israeli military spokesperson put a video online taunting Anas Sharif, basically saying that he's a terrorist. This prompted the Committee to Protect Journalists to issue a statement. This is in late July, right before he was killed, saying they're gravely concerned for Anas's safety. The UN Special Rapporteur on Freedom of Expression also issued a statement saying that, you know, his life was in danger. And Israel went ahead and assassinated him anyway. And finally, I would say that, you know, we're supposed to be in a ceasefire. This is not stopped. They are continuing to kill journalists. In April, they killed a journalist who's also working for Al Jazeera called Mohammed Wesheikh in an airstrike on his car in Gaza City. He was a correspondent and he was quite well known. And his brother, Ahmed Wesheikh, would be the one who would set up the camera shot for him. He would film with him. He was his cameraman, also worked for Al Jazeera. They killed Ahmed, his younger brother, in June, just this past June. Both times they claimed without providing any evidence that they were both Hamas militants. So this is continuing to happen, this unprecedented slaughter. And it has to stop, and it won't stop unless people speak out.
And final question, Sharif. As I mentioned, in the media's coverage of this so-called Board of Peace, which is getting a lot of attention now, it is very rare to hear about what is actually happening on the ground, the number of people killed. And I just was searching Gaza to see the latest headlines. And according to reports, Jared Kushner may be visiting Israel next week. So that is going to get a lot of attention. The question is, are people going to also talk about what Palestinians are actually dealing with on the ground? I mean, how much longer can this last? What is the end game here? What do you think Gaza's future looks like?
That's right. Jared Kushner is supposed to go next week, and they're having meetings in Cairo with different members of the Board of Peace. And this is all coming in the wake, by the way, of a new deal that was announced first by President Trump, saying that Hamas for the first time had formally committed to relinquishing its weapons. Hamas did say that it engaged with mediators and it agreed to hand over its weapons as long as Israel fulfilled all of its obligations that it signed in the October 2025 agreement. And so, which include a phased withdrawal from Gaza and, most importantly, a permanent end to the ongoing attacks. What was the response of Israel? It conducted one of the most lethal bombing campaigns since the ceasefire was signed. You know, there was like 18 Palestinians killed on one day just after this was announced. And then Netanyahu came out and flatly rejected the deal and said, we will not stop unless Hamas gives up all of its weapons first. So there is no, but the problem is that, the coverage has to reflect this reality. The reality is Israel is not giving is violating the ceasefire every day and is not agreeing to stop. And, Hamas makes this big concession and says we will give up weapons as long and we'll do it in parallel with Israel stopping its attacks and pulling back. And Israel says no. So, people need to understand the context of when they're reading this and also that these attacks continue almost every single day, but it's become normalized. It's become normalized in a very easy way. And finally, I will say this is not restricted to Gaza. In the West Bank now, as we know, there's vicious, vicious attacks by settlers that are backed by the Israeli military, and journalists are being arrested. Just 2 days ago, Mohammed Awad, who is a video journalist who works with Dropsite News, he works with Agence France-Presse as well, they came to his home, Israeli soldiers, beat down the door, took him away, blindfolded him in handcuffs. We don't know where he is right now. He's being interrogated, and he's probably, in all likelihood, going to spend months and months and months in a dungeon without charge. The last journalist that this happened to, who also worked for Dropsite, was Mujahid Assadi. He's a veteran journalist in Jenin. He was arrested in September 2024. He just got out, nearly 2 years later. He was held without charge. He lost a lot of weight. And he's actually going to be writing a piece for Dropsite about his experience in prison. But this continues to happen, not just in Gaza, but across Palestine.
Sharif Abdul-Qaddous is an award-winning journalist and editor for the Middle East and North Africa at Dropsite, an independent investigative news organization dedicated to exposing the crimes of the powerful. Sharif, thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Coming up after a break, we will discuss an NPR investigation about Appalachian coal miners facing the highest rates of black lung disease in 50 years. This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. We'll be back after this.